just because we're magic doesn't mean we're not real. Real.
All right, everybody, what's up? Welcome to a new episode of Ball Girl Magic.
Ball Girl Magic.
Ball Girl
Magic.
You go up, I'll go down.
Magic.
Ooh, yeah.
Devante.
First of all, okay.
I don't apologize, no.
Back-to-back episodes. Yvonne and I are next to each other in person. And right now we're actually in a studio, so we have these microphones in our faces and we think we're Mariah Carey. And
well, we also had the headphones, so I'm about to do one sweet day.
One sweet day.
One sweet day. And I knew you're crying down on me. Did I just say crying down on me?
I don't know the words. We never know the words. First of all, I would like to thank everyone who's still listening at this point.
Bless you. Y'all are committed fans.
Because we can't sing. So
you can hold a note. You can rap.
Last time we did a podcast, you tried to play me for my rapping.
No. You definitely had a freestyle, and
I came with the heat that time.
All right, calm down, Dylon.
Dylon. More fire.
Yo, I legit Googled him the other day to figure out what he was doing.
Wait, what?
I did. I Googled
what's Dylon up to?
You know, I mean, I'm still trying to put out music.
Really?
He's good for him.
Well, live your best
God
life.
God bless you, Dylon.
And pursue your passion.
Yo, he's out here, like, he got a couple thousand followers on the gram.
I thought you was going to say dollars. And I was like, that would be petty.
I don't know this man's bank. Right? He's living his best life. He's still cute with his little dimple.
Look at him.
Yeah.
Dylon.
I want to know, though, what happened to the other Making the Band, like, folks.
Right.
I wanted to be a Making the Band reunion. Like, I feel like they should have come out
The reunion.
I feel like they should have come out with the Bad Boy reunion. Like, they should have come out.
They should have come out as a part of it. You know what? People would have been lit for it, though.
Yo, I definitely would have been like, yo, like.
Respect. Like, okay, I'm here for y'all.
Hot fire.
Hot fire. All right. Welcome into Ball Girl Magic. And speaking of hot fire, I just, Yvonne, like every time I see you, you're doing something new, different, and awesome. And this time just wanted to take a community of people with you and always raising up the Nigerian community at all times. Last night was the second annual or first annual?
The
second annual Night of Nigerian Excellence in Los Angeles. How did it go, girl? Well, I wasn't able to be there. I was working NBA games, but
yeah, I mean,
tell me about it.
You have a job, so that's cool.
I almost quit my job to be there, honestly.
Girl,
that's how big it was to me.
Get them checks.
Now that you got that HBO money, I can live with you now, right?
Hold on.
I can cook.
Listen.
Okay, look at
I just got rid of Sally Mae. I don't need no other folks I need to be taking care of.
Yvonne's body language completely changed. She looked at me like, girl, I just met you.
Listen. Yo, I haven't started getting the hit ups by families yet. So I was
girl.
Like, you try to put in your bid first.
Right.
Like, hey, girl. So
hey, girl.
I just need a new car. Really, Ross? That's what
really?
We do it?
Girl, you better. Okay, so no. how was the Night of Nigerian Excellence?
No, it was amazing. You know, I've always said, you know, when I eat, we all eat, with the exception of Ross trying to hit me for money 5 seconds ago. But no, I mean that in the same way of like, yo, if I win, we win in, like all of us collectively. Mm-hmm. And so it was always my desire to have like a night where we celebrate the accomplishments of fellow Nigerians who are like in academia, in music, in entertainment, in law, in like whatever your flavor is. If you're killing the game in that, like I wanted you to be in that room, because it's also like, look no further. If you need something, your answer is right here in this room. And like,
for sure.
I think it was time to really change the narrative because, you know, growing up, it wasn't cool to be Nigerian. I mean, we were everything from African booty scratchers to
Absolutely.
Go back to Africa. It's like, bro, calm down.
I feel that too. Like growing up, I feel like most kids want to just fit in, right? Or not be the outcast. I remember the jokes on, you know, was your dad fighting lions?
Yeah.
Or
do y'all have a an elephant in your backyard? I'm like, right. Bruh, this is not Ringling Brothers.
How do you say your last name? All the jokes on Anawududu, like people would say stuff like that, you know. And then as I remember, my dad would always say, "Know where you're from." We've said this before. Know your culture. Know your people. When people get older, now, am I lying? How many friends do you have right now that
who
are
like,
taking
look,
tests
yo,
right now to know where they're from? Like, I have like four friends within this like last 2 weeks who have told me, like, oh, I just got that. What's the name of the test? I forgot.
Like,
I just
23andMe and the, like, 20, Ancestry.com.
And I found out I'm from this tribe or this. And I remember my dad saying that one day people are going to grow up and be paying money to know where they're from, and you will always know where you're from. And so this is a part of that pride that we have now.
Yeah. I mean, and shout out to all those people who are, you know, kind of taking, you know, their ancestry and their history.
Right, right.
And
I don't mean to alienate them, but I'm just speaking to my experience.
No, because, like, growing up, it wasn't cool to be us. Like, and I was getting picked on by black folk. It wasn't even, like, white people picking on me. It was, like, the black folks, like, we don't like you. It's like, what did I do to you?
Right.
Which is so crazy because, like, coming from, because I was six when I got here, and coming from Nigeria, it's like, everybody's black. So I was just like, how are you picking on me? Aren't we the same? And, but then it was, like, this chasm, this divide. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now it's like, everybody want a Nigerian friend. Because we're amazing.
Right. Speaking of good.
Drop the pin.
We're not
sending those emails. Nah, that's not us.
Okay.
but outside of that, we are effing amazing. And so, like, so the night was really just the highlight and big up people who are excelling, and it was just a beautiful. It was just a beautiful night. People came in their agbada, like I'm talking about, like the chief, like outfits that you had to, like, throw over your shoulder,
for sure.
Then, like, the hats, like the men came through looking like they was trying to
like
catch
royalty.
They was trying to catch. I was like, oh, she's your queen to be.
Were there any dowries proposed out
you
there?
You know, we were trying to get my the guests in studio right now married, and I'll get to that.
In a second.
Like my parents would say, shine your eye. Shine your eye. That's what I was like, y'all.
What does shine your eye mean for
shine
those?
Your eye means, like, you know, you go to an event, it's like, keep your eye open. Shine it. Shine, like a flashlight. Shine your eye.
Oh, my God.
Just to make sure, like, to
that's
see if you
see
somebody.
Such a Nigerian mother so telling you to shine your eye.
Shine your eye. I'm like, I'm not, like, a torch. Like, crazy.
Like, Mom, this is church. I thought we was here to praise.
Isn't this communion? You can get holy with communion if you shine your eye. I don't know what's going on, but no, it was really awesome. And I think a lot of people, like, who even weren't even Nigerian, because, you know, we had, like, people working the event. It was like the bouncer was like, "This is not what I expected." He's like, "I normally do events, which is like old white dudes," and just to see, like, a classy place filled with nothing but Africans, like, really just promoting their culture. He was like, "I haven't seen this," so it was really beautiful. And somebody came up to me and was like, you need to probably have, like, a speed dating aspect of this at the end of it. I was like, you know what? I'll take 10% on all the unions that are forced.
Right, right.
But we were also able to highlight.
That is also incredibly Nigerian. Like, like, come to Night of Nigerian Excellence. Also, find a proper husband and wife.
And wife. Just please.
And wife.
Please. I have two goats in my Uber. Right. Whoever you are, you can have one of them.
Right. Like, any women over 35, we will have a speed social.
Because it's time. You are right.
It's time. You are ripe. Absolutely. We should have a section of Nigerian moms just there, like, guilting and putting pressure on people.
If you are over 35 and you're African, you have been told, you are ripe.
You are ripe.
You are overripe, self. Yeah. You're a spotted banana.
Yvonne. Oh, my gosh. So it sounded like a great success.
It was. And so we highlighted two organizations and two people. The one was Afam Onyema, and he has the GNCO Foundation, which is building hospitals and schools in Nigeria, which I thought was really cool because he used to be a former football player and was just like, you know what? Awesome. I'm not playing ball no more. I want to just, you know, give back. Mm-hmm. And then another young lady that we highlighted who is our in-studio guest today is Tolu Olibumi, who I actually met because I read her story very recently at the Anti-Defamation League's event at the Kennedy Center. And I was just moved. I was just moved by her story, and, you know, we'll get into it. I'll have her just share. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, Tolu, I'm having this event in LA. I think you should be there. I just think that people should know who you are. And I think, especially in our community, we should know the work that you're doing and how you're fighting for not just Nigerians, but, like, really any immigrant. Right. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the news of late with immigrants. Recently, the president of these United States said that he's going to do away with the diversity visa.
Right.
And it was just like, bruh, like, because of what happened. You know, it was all prompted by what happened in New York City, which was devastating. But what was interesting is the day after New York, he's like, I got to do away with all these visas because, you know, obviously the guy who perpetrated those acts was a brown man. But the day after Vegas and the day after Charlottesville, there wasn't such a swift action for gun control or, you know, hey, let's dial down this, like, racist speech.
Right.
It was like, ah, oh, well, you know, there were some really good people on both sides.
Absolutely. Right.
So, so Tolu, welcome to the show. Welcome to Ball Girl Magic.
Welcome, Tolu. And for people, I always like to introduce, I'm sure we will have a chance to dive in through all the different things that you've already accomplished and are trying to do. But for all of our listeners, Tolu, she's a renowned immigrants right activist and undocumented Nigerian immigrant herself. She's in the U.S. working on decreasing the challenges facing undocumented immigrants in the U.S. And, you know, Yvonne, listening to you, like, your thoughts, I'm hearing a lot. I'm seeing a lot on Twitter, on social media. And I think, first and foremost, we, as a country, we need to get comfortable with understanding how to talk about immigrants in this country and perhaps even just dispelling, understanding the challenges and dispelling some misconceptions. Like,
absolutely.
Totally. I mean, where would you even start with that for the education, a starting point for people to really understand the situation for undocumented immigrants in the U.S., for most people in the U.S., the regular person in the U.S. to understand?
Yeah, I mean, I think you should start with your story because it's really fascinating, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. It's thrilling to be here with the both of you.
Naija power all day long.
All day.
All day.
All day, every day. Praise the Lord.
Okay.
Praise the Lord.
We should have started in praise, honestly. We should have started the episode in praise.
You can't have three Nigerians without saying praise the Lord. Or heep, heep, heep.
Hooray! Oh, my God. That is...
We definitely heap, heap, heaped at Night of Nigerian Excellence. We did.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
But go ahead, Tolu.
Yeah, so I came to the U.S. from Nigeria when I was 14. I was born in Lagos. I went to school in Lagos for a while and moved to the U.S. because of struggles that my family had in Nigeria. And grew up in Maryland, went to high school, went to college in Virginia, studied.
You got a full scholarship.
I did. I was blessed to get a scholarship to an amazing school in Virginia. I'd wanted to be an engineer since I was 8 and, you know, pursued that in school, settled on chemical engineering after I actually took my first chemistry class and it kicked my butt. But I loved every single minute of it and decided that I needed more of that in my life because why not?
Because why not?
I'm Nigerian now.
You like a challenge.
But I graduated with that chemical engineering degree and realized that I'd lost access to my legal immigration status and I could not work in my field. So went
and you got offers.
I did.
So you graduated top of your class and then the job offers were coming and you were like, I can't take any of these.
I had opportunities to work for some amazing companies, and I could not take the jobs. So I went to all of these lawyers like, hey, listen, you know, the companies mostly knew why I couldn't take the jobs and things would just kind of go away, but I didn't. So I started doing my own research, trying to understand what was happening. And then after going to a bunch of lawyers, realized that in 1996, the U.S. Changed the law in such radically significant ways that it made it nearly impossible for folks that are undocumented for any reason, whether through, you know, missing a deadline or coming here in an undocumented manner or being brought here by their parents like me and other dreamers. So those are young people that came to the U.S. Not without without being at fault, have grown up here. Some
can you give me an example of this might sound like a silly question.
No.
Coming here without fault, like how are the ways people would get in as an undocumented immigrant?
So I think what most people are familiar with in the U.S. and stereotypically is they cross the border. They came in from Mexico. I think generally a lot of folks are familiar with that as one way to come in to the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant. You can also become undocumented if you come in legally. Say you come on a visitor visa and perhaps you overstayed your visa or you're here on a student visa and you lose that at some point or maybe you miss the filing deadline with U.S. immigration. There are 1,001 ways for you to become undocumented, but next to none to be able to, quote unquote, get right with the law.
So, what happened in 96? Was there anything that happened to cause it to change so drastically?
There was a lot of anti the anti-immigrant fever was starting to boil in the U.S. And beyond that, there was this focus on criminalizing being here as an undocumented immigrant as opposed to focusing on integration. Mm-hmm. And so what was passed in the Congress and signed by then President Clinton was a bill that closed the ways in which undocumented immigrants actually got right with the law, and doubled funding for deportations.
Wow.
And more than doubled, actually. And you saw a dramatic rise in how many people were undocumented prior to the 1996 law and following it. So there was this was supposed to be a crackdown on undocumented immigration, but all it did was just focus on criminalizing even long-term U.S. residents. Mm-hmm. Even green card holders could now be deported for, you know, certain crimes that have been committed even after they've paid their dues to society. And so that absolutely increased, you know, the vast majority of undocumented immigrants being in the U.S. It also closed avenues for folks who would come here to work. So a lot of seasonal workers would come in, mm-hmm. work, go back home. Mm-hmm. But then the U.S. made it near impossible for them to go back and forth. And so they stayed.
Right.
And of course, when people stay, they're not going to stay. You know, father's not going to stay without his wife, his kids, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so the families came and they stayed. And there were no avenues for those folks to get in, quote unquote, in line.
How is there a community of people that are keeping this on the low, mm-hmm. that they're an undocumented immigrant, like basically hiding? And then there are some that are able to raise their hand and say, I'm an undocumented immigrant. Are there penalties? Are there...
Absolutely. For every undocumented immigrant like me that shares their story, there is a significant risk. There came this rise in the U.S. Where undocumented immigrants, led by the Dreamers, so Dreamers are undocumented young people that have grown up in the U.S. I came at 14. There are folks that came in when they were 2 months old. There are folks that came in when they were 6 months. Mm-hmm. But then they have never been provided an avenue to actually gain legal status. Mm-hmm. And so the Dreamers are named for legislation in Congress that would actually give legal status and ultimately citizenship to young people like me. And it's incredibly intense. So it narrows the pool of who would qualify. So coming, when entering the U.S. before you turn 16, mm-hmm. going to high school here, going to college or joining the military, you know, and being of good moral character, which is a term in law that just says, you know, you're a good person, haven't committed crimes, haven't, you know, you've just stayed right with the law. Mm-hmm. You have to pay whatever taxes that you owe. Most undocumented pay at least some form of taxes, mm-hmm. as opposed to what most people think. So it
You actually were integral in kind of creating the legislature that led to the DREAM Act.
So the DREAM Act has actually been around since 2001.
Uh-huh.
So Congress has been failing to pass the DREAM Act since 2001. I started working in advocacy in 1998 following, you know, I was actually inspired to start this work by the Obama campaign, mm-hmm. and the Clinton campaign. So that presidential election really sparked in me a desire to go beyond just living in fear and asking myself, if I consider myself American in every way but paperwork, which most Dreamers do, mm-hmm. and I would venture to say most undocumented immigrants do, then what am I doing to prove my citizenry? How am I helping to create that more perfect union that we're all seeking after? Mm-hmm. And I decided that the part that I could play was support an organization that was instrumental in helping to write this legislation, had been pushing for it for many, many years. So
I want to piggyback that. So what do you think it means to be American, and what do you hope your life and the lives of other people who might be come in or right now be an undocumented immigrant, what do you think their American life should be?
You know, I think that whether you are an undocumented immigrant or you're a legal immigrant or you're a U.S. citizen, or naturalized U.S. citizen, or you're many generations removed from your immigrant story, this land is, in his history, founded, built by immigrants. There is a long line of immigration within our blood. That's kind of how we renew the quote-unquote Americanness that is America. It's through the hard work and the dedication of immigrants. So I think for all people, whether they're undocumented or illegal immigrants, we're all seeking after the American dream. And that takes shape in different ways. And I think it's so important to recognize the humanity in people and their commitment to making America the best possible one, not just for them, but also for their communities. And that's what we're all seeking after, right? We're just trying to live.
Humanity is a really important word, I think. You know,
humanity and compassion.
Compassion. And I feel like people, when they hear this topic, sometimes get scared.
Yeah.
Are they taking jobs?
Yeah.
Are what are we competing against? Are they coming in here and committing crimes and hurting people? Are they stealing? Are they raping people? Like,
but it's like what American citizens commit crimes. American citizens, you
people
know, like
people are people.
Don't work and do work. And you know, it's just like American citizen shot up over 500 people in Las Vegas. And still people were like, well, it was, you know, he was a grandfather. And he was like, he was a terrorist. He was a homegrown terrorist. Mm-hmm. But because he wasn't of brown hue, it's not looked at the same. So it's just like, everybody, calm down. But what I think is really interesting about your story, and when I heard it, I was just like devastated by it. You did all this work to push the DREAM Act. You introduced President Obama, was it in Congress?
At the White House.
That had to be pretty cool.
It was kind of awesome.
And, I mean, like you're living the dream.
Yeah,
like,
you are a dreamer living the dream. Right?
Like, people it was are like, awesome. I want to meet President Obama, but like you through your story. And
do you
again,
have his phone number? Y'all cool? Like, do you... You and him.
Can I plead the fifth?
Yeah.
Is that okay? I don't know. Secret Service might like take this podcast.
Code name Blue.
Ball Girl Magic episode 18. We have to take it down.
But then when the DREAM Act did pass, you were what, 4 to 6 months?
So what President Obama, so we failed to pass, we came closest to passing the DREAM Act in 2010, which is, you know, legislation that I worked on for many years. And, you know, in 2012, after all the work that we've done, after undocumented immigrants had put themselves at risk, DREAMers from coast to coast has stood up without any protection and without any sort of... trust that they would be able to go back home after they stood in front of an entire room full of people to say, I'm here, I'm undocumented, this is my story. Mm-hmm. Following that, we continue to push the White House to do something. Since we couldn't get something done in Congress, we asked the president to do something. And that's when he issued the executive order called DACA. Mm-hmm. So most people have heard about DACA over the past few months and what the current president is trying to do with DACA, which he has essentially done is rescind it. Mm-hmm. I know there is this, we're spacing it out and winding it down. The truth is there are people that are already in mortal danger of being in danger of being deported. And so President Obama created a way to actually protect DREAMers, a certain class of DREAMers, by giving them work permits, the ability to stay, the ability to get driver's license if their states didn't allow them to get driver's license. On the day that he announced that executive order, I was on the cover of Time magazine with other DREAMers, and a few of us, about three or so of us, missed that window.
To be protected under DACA.
Exactly. So there was an upper age limit. So you had everything with the DREAM Act where you came in before you were 16, you went to high school, college, military, all this stuff. But then there was now this arbitrary upper age limit where you had to be under 30. Mm. I turned 31 just a few months prior. And so I could not benefit from DACA. And I'd fought for DACA. And I continue to fight for DACA. And DACA has actually protected about 800,000 undocumented immigrants. These are DREAMers that willingly gave all of their information to the government and said, I am trusting you with my name, where I went to school,
where I live,
where my parents are, where my siblings are. And you are going to, for that trust and for my $500, I am going to get, you know, vetted by you. So fingerprinted, biometrics, et cetera. And then I'll be able to get a work permit if I pass all of those. And now all of those 800,000 people that are required to be in school or working, and so 92% are working and a part of our economy, are in danger of, one, losing their jobs and being deported.
So I am curious now for you, right, as someone who is a loud voice, an advocate for this, for people that don't want to see this type of progress made on the issue, now that you have shared your story and are not protected, I mean, do you ever get worried they may try to deport you or, you know, attack you? You're vulnerable.
Absolutely. I am completely vulnerable. And I have been since I started sharing.
And not
my
just
story.
Because you shared. I mean, you are one of the leading voices. Yeah. I mean, it could be that people might want to quiet you.
Right.
But I think the beauty of it, too, and again, you can speak to this, is that's the bravery. That's
right.
That's the
right,
stance.
That's what I'm asking. I want to know, like, how do you handle that pressure every day?
So for me, I came into this. I've always been a sort of a reluctant advocate in terms of sharing my own personal story. I came into this because I wanted to help other people. And I didn't start sharing my own personal story, which is actually the worst kept secret in DC for a long time, because I was working on the back end helping other dreamers share their stories. But I didn't think my story was that important, right? Mm. I didn't think I was special or anything like that, that people needed to hear my story. But the more I went to the Hill and I would sit with senators and members of Congress or their staff, and they would think that I was a lawyer with the immigrant advocacy group I was with, and say, well, you just don't understand. Mm-hmm. These people don't speak English. What we need are STEM graduates. Like, this is, you know, that's what we need in our country. We need to fight for that. And I realized that, oh, wait, these people, these legislators that are writing these laws, some of them don't understand that there are black immigrants. There are STEM graduates that are undocumented immigrants.
There are white immigrants.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, there are Scottish immigrants, Irish immigrants. The Irish have 50,000 undocumented immigrants in the U.S. And the Irish the Irish government has been quite vocal in terms of advocating for their folks. So this issue just goes far beyond race and gender and socioeconomic status. Mm-hmm. It is a broad problem that needs to be faced. And so I came into this issue and started sharing my story because it needed to be told. Mm-hmm. And I continue to share it now because it still needs to be told, now more than ever. And I don't think everyone is called to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so if you have been called to do it and you are able to do it, then I think you have a responsibility to do whatever it is that you can. And I say that knowing that this is an extremely serious and personal decision. It is not an easy one to take. And I absolutely do not expect or encourage every undocumented immigrant to get up and say, I'm undocumented. Mm. I think for some folks, the bravest thing they can do is get up, go to work, and feed their kids.
Yeah.
I think that's their part.
And I think, I think to your part, Roz, is like, you're immensely brave for taking this stance, for having this voice, for saying, you know what? It's almost like an Esther moment. If I perish, I perish. but I gotta do what I gotta do for my people. And what I love is that you're putting a face that is different than other faces that people kind of like allocate to the immigration issue. And also, like, the stuff that you have to go through. Like, and if I could just share, just because I know a little bit about your story, is that your father passed away in, 2006. And you had to make a decision. Do I go home to bury my father and risk losing my status, or stay here in America knowing that I will not see my father to his final resting place, just so that I can stay here and continue to try and better my life?
What did you choose?
I stayed. I'm still here. If I had left, I would not be sitting here with you right now.
And that is a choice. That is just those. Imagine those everyday. Some are simple, but others are detrimental. Those choices that people in your situation, Americans in your situation, have to face and deal with every single day. And so for that, I just thank you for using your voice in this way, for also being, you know, very open about saying, hey, listen, this is not for the faint of heart. And if you don't choose to use your voice in this way, it's like, it's not a penalization on who you are. It's like, you have to do what you have to do to protect your family. But for, I think what you do is humanize the immigration story, and you lead people to have more and more compassion. Because it's like, every day has to be a struggle. How do you feed yourself if, like, you can't work in a way that you can get finances coming in regularly? I mean, listen, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. So I know what it was like when it was like, listen, I'll do any job. I'll try to do any job. And that's like, if I could get a job, you're like, I'll do any job.
Right.
And it's like, you can't. You can't work. Or, you know, we just don't want to take the liability on. Meanwhile, you're a college graduate and you had offers. So that's that. I mean, I commend you in so many ways, shape, and form.
Thank you so much as well. And I think, too, it's not just your bravery and other undocumented immigrants either sharing their story or whatever. I think it doesn't just have to be the battle of those people. I think that I imagine there would have to be the voices and the action of people who are documented, who are U.S. citizens.
Absolutely.
So, like, this conversation is really healthy. The awareness is big. And now, as you know, we do have to, it's sad, we could go on forever, but as we start to wrap it up, I'd love to know, like, what can U.S. citizens do, people who are here legally, how can they make a difference?
And also to tag on to that, like, what is this is kind of a joke we had yesterday, but like, what is the one way that you could stay here legally?
So she's alluding to the fact that after going to a bunch of lawyers before I started working in advocacy, I quite literally had one lawyer tell me, you're a pretty young thing, find a nice young man and get married.
Wow.
So the options were a change in U.S. law or marriage to a U.S. citizen. So I took the easier route and decided to help change your law.
Right.
Because it's hard out here for a single woman.
Right. Is that how hard it is to find a good man right now? Like, we got to change laws instead of getting married.
Change laws.
Is that where it's at?
It was easier to be like, Obama, I'll come to the White House and work with you on this one.
That is the state of dating right
now. We gotta have Tinder for citizens, right? And undocumented citizens as well.
Oh my God. But anyway, what can we do if we're moved by the conversation and we're like, all right, what can we do to make a difference and help progress this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the very first thing you could do is continue these conversations and share the stories. Share my story. Share stories of your friends, your neighbors. I think that's incredibly important. That's part of what we did with Immigrant Heritage Month, is allow folks to have this conversation.
What is Immigrant Heritage Month? I know you started that. We meant to get to it. So what is that?
So Immigrant Heritage Month is actually June. We founded Immigrant Heritage Month in 2014, and it's been going on ever since. So every month, the U.S. actually now celebrates Immigrant Heritage Month, and it is a thing of beauty that an undocumented Nigerian immigrant is now basically enshrined in the annals of American history as being a co-founder of Immigrant Heritage Month, which
nice.
I think is just, that's what America is about, right? And what we did was create a space for as many Americans as possible to come in and have a conversation about this. This does not have to be a political thing. It can be a, hey, you know, you're Irish, your family came here God knows how many generations ago, but you have that immigrant heritage. Tell me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you are right off the boat. There are no boats anymore, but basically, you know what I'm talking about. Like, you just came and you still have that thick Nigerian accent going, like, tell me about that. So I think it's really about connecting with people and not living in isolation. There's a beautiful immigrant story within everyone, whether you're first generation or 10th generation. Continuing that conversation is incredibly important, and asking our Congress to do better. So right now, you can ask our Congress to pass the DREAM Act. We want a clean bill before the end of the year. That is one thing that you can help. Like, if you can't find me a husband, can you at least just pass the DREAM Act?
Right. Anybody got a cousin, a grandfather,
grandfather.
So girl, them AARP benefits gonna come through for you.
Y'all are so silly.
Act like you know.
I'm so mad. Passing the DREAM Act is easier than finding a man in 2017.
It's real in these streets, y'all. It's real. If you're a good man, step up. Call in to Walk Girl Magic after dark.
Right, because we in the studio right now. Right, we have Tolu here. But no, seriously, because we do have to wrap up. Thank you so much. We have Tolu Olugbumi here. Thank you so much for your time, for your bravery, for your story, for sharing this.
And giving a face to the situation. I think a lot of times it's easy to say a lot of things when the problem and the situation is faceless, but you give a face and a voice to the situation. So we just thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
thank you
girl.
So much. It was an honor. All right, thank girl. You guys. Oh, and I got to say, before we wrap up, not related to this conversation. This is I'm pulling a Roz in this shameless plug.
Oh, absolutely. I'm always here for a shameless plug. Go ahead. Shout yourself out. Let's do it.
So my first magazine cover is...
That should have been me throwing the lob, because I was so taken by Tolu. I completely forgot how excited I was when Yvonne was on Radiant Health magazine, her first ever cover. And Radiant couldn't have been a better title of a magazine that you have for your first cover. Seriously, you were glowing.
I got tears right now. These are thug tears.
No, right. Seriously,
is it okay
no.
if I say how proud I am?
Please.
Speak
your truth.
So we met on Monday, and she has changed my life in ways that I couldn't have imagined. Just the light of her radiating on me has made me a better person in 1,000 different ways. And it is an honor to know you. I am so blessed. I have found my soul sister, and I love it. I love it. Congratulations on all of the amazing work. And you have to see this magazine.
Oh, my God.
You can see it at every Barnes & Noble.
Pop, pow.
Pop, 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 pop. It dropped on shelves Friday, November 3rd, so go pick it up.
I'm about to go and get one right now, and I want you to sign it for me.
Done
and I want you to put lipstick on and kiss it.
This is your 10th. This is your 10th edition. They only print 2 a year. So it's like a coffee book collector's item. It's mad thick. But yeah,
uh-oh.
It's like,
okay.
So
well,
it's real.
Jeez.
It's real in these
congratulations.
Streets. I appreciate that.
Awesome.
Thank you, boo.
So, okay, I think that's a perfect way to end. No, for real, it's a perfect way to end this Ball Girl Magic. I hope all y'all listening are radiant as well with the
and
knowledge
inspired.
And James
yeah,
you've
man.
Taken in. And we'll see you for the next one.